Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Thursday. I had to catch myself. Thursday evening in Central Kentucky. Not our usual day of the week, but it has not been our usual week. But we're ready for episode number 385. Thank you, of course, to Far Cry, the band, and, of course, their fearless lead guitarist, Pete Fry, for their intro music. Love it. Go check it out. But actually, that song is on their newest album, Balance. So check that out. We love that. Love that track. And definitely looking forward to tonight because it's going to be a themed show. And joining me for the co-hosting side of things is, you're going to be happy because finally we got the return of the one, the only, the vivacious, the loquacious Holly Phillippe. And joining her also is Becca Harrison. Hello, everybody. They're on a mic in the other room.
Hello. Oh. Hello. I'm here, but not fully, but I'm here.
Yes,
I know,
yes,
I
disclaimer.
Still have thousands of messages, people.
Yes.
I know. I have not answered messages in like a week. I still am recovering.
Yeah.
I've got my medicines I need now. They started me on antibiotics, and I'm coming out of it, but I'm still not 100%, but I promise Monday I will hit the ground running and get caught back up. So don't think I'm ignoring you. It's just I don't feel like, you know, working a whole lot right now. But I'm getting there.
I want to vouch for her. I did promise her a disclaimer to start the show. But, yes, she is just started a new course of antibiotics as of last night. They finally figured out what will work with what she's been dealing with and got that hurdle over, but it's been really tough. She's been bedridden and definitely bravely being on tonight. And of course, yeah, a little, you know, it's not, like I said, not easy for her to do so. But she's here to bring you all a good show tonight and definitely will be hitting the ground running at the beginning of next week, so as she said. So we've been having lots of adventures, but we're glad to have, both Holly and Becca with us tonight. And also, tonight is going to be one of those cool theme nights, which, of course, we'll be talking about creating compelling characters. But before we get into that, I would definitely want to welcome those who are entering the chat room. Looks like we got a nice group starting to assemble there. Holly and Becca are both in there, as well as Sandy Lender, the genre blender, and the man behind the Lemur throne at next year's Imaginarium, Clayton Barnett, and Moon, Dwan Hearn. Yes, we had a little call in from him on open line night. That was a lot of fun last week, and definitely looking forward to having him as a full featured guest very shortly. So yeah, he's going to be looking out for a note from me on that, because I want to have Moon get featured on the show here. And so yeah, got a good group building in the chat room. If you have any trouble logging in, just refresh the page. Sometimes it does get a little bit finicky, but it does tend to work, which is the good news. But we'll go ahead and give you some quick Imaginarium updates before we get into the heart of the show. And, of course, we're going to spotlight those that brought you tonight's show as well. But with the Imaginarium, of course, the Star Chamber Show is affiliated with the Imaginarium Convention now in its 11th year. And tonight, yes, it is important to remind you that you have two more days. If you have any kind of film or screenplay project that you would like to enter for consideration in this year's film festival, you can enter through the platform's Film Freeway and also through the International Screenwriters Association. And you have until Saturday the 30th. So Saturday the 30th, you can still get them in at early discounted rates. They will go up a bit after Saturday. So, yeah, you want to save. You want to save. We do try to give early bird discounts for everyone to save and take advantage of. And that is expiring after Saturday, that discount. So get your projects in. We take feature films, short films, documentaries, web series, music videos, and screenplays of all genres. And we've also expanded the number of award categories for the juried awards. So, yeah, there are more awards than ever this year. So, yes, get your projects in, folks. Don't miss out on that. Hint, hint to Moon and the fine team behind Screenshots. Yeah, go ahead, get it exhibited. But then we've got some additional updates with some new guests. We've been very busy. And we've got four new panelists to tell you about and two new spotlighted guests coming in. Again, this reflects, you know, the amazing dynamic of new faces and familiar faces at Imaginarium. But new panelists include Bonnie Elizabeth, who will be a panelist for the first time, the amazing Randy Perrin, the fantastic romance author, then also author and editor Kelly Ferguson, and then also Richard Cartwright will be returning as an official panelist in 2024. And then we also welcomed audiobook narrator, voice actor, and producer J.L. Hutchins. And J.L. is an amazing talent who has contributed voice acting talents and narration for all kinds of platforms, including the Nintendo Switch and many other video games, and numerous audiobooks. And also J.L. is the co-owner of Head First Media. It's a recording studio based in Louisville, Kentucky, that's worked with just about every music genre imaginable and also does a lot of great stuff as far as producing TV, radio, podcasts, internet, corporate training videos, movies, soundtracks, and audiobooks. So, yeah, definitely a lot of expertise coming with J.L. and has a lot of expertise in the area of audio production, audio books, and all kinds of things in that those spheres. Definitely someone you want to meet, and JL is, of course, attending for the first time to Imaginarium. Now, coming back to Imaginarium is one that Holly and I just adore this guy, and I know some of you do too as well that are listening, but that would be award-winning filmmaker, screenwriter, comic creator Devin Hilton. Just super nice guy, super knowledgeable, and just really making strides. His first feature film, The Repairman, won numerous international awards, screened on multiple continents. And, I mean, he's published several graphic novels, and he also has had some of his properties optioned for feature film development, including production companies like Platinum Studios. And if you know them, you know they were affiliated with the Hollywood Films, Men in Black, and Cowboys and Aliens. So that is really cool. We love Devin, just a superb talent and just a great member of the Imaginarium community as well. So, yeah, definitely excited to be able to announce him as a spotlighted guest. So there you go, folks. I doubt Holly has a lot of updates because she's been bedridden. But, Holly, is there anything, any reminders, anything you want to tell folks about real quick? Are you pretty much waiting until next week?
Probably wait till next week. I did noodle through. I accepted some new guests, and I sent out a few emails the other day. I got them caught up, but there is some really cool workshops I'm looking into. When I get them set solid on my schedule, you know, I'll talk more about that. But yeah, guys, we've got some really cool, fresh ideas, really fun and neat workshops already coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, a lot. And I know she's got a lot on her plate that she's got planned and been working on. And just that lovely, you know, lovely thing called illness that strikes us when we least need to be struck by it. Yeah, no fun. But definitely good to and thank you for the kind words, Clayton. Yeah, Clayton is talking in a chat room to Holly about a little bit about that side of things, and he asked a question about the Lemur Throne. Yeah, that's gonna be a great spot that's being headed up by multiple authors that are attending next year, And yeah, the Lemur Throne, I'm sure we'll have somebody from the gang on the show at some point to talk about that. That'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a gathering point for discussion and creative exchange and networking. It's going to be at his Creatives Alley booth spot. But yeah, it's a great concept. And so keep an eye on that. Clayton's always up to something interesting. You can be assured of that. But tonight's show is brought to you by, it's time for you to make some choices. That's right, Sandy Lender. And she's brought you tonight's show as well as the amazing folks at Bostet Publications. So first, we're going to have you ponder the next book buying choices that you make and make the right ones with Sandy Lender's Great, Great Choices trilogy. But here's some of that, a little bit about it from her. Here you go.
Prophecies stirring in the land of Onveiled, dragons rise and an unclean army marches toward Amanda Sharice. Our unsure heroine has choices to make and enemy lives to take in Sandy Lender's epic fantasy series, available now from Seven Star Press. Choices meant for gods, choices meant for kings, and choices meant for all offer girl power Machiavellian adventure of hope versus despair, a chosen one versus free will, and good versus evil. Learn more at AuthorSandyLender.com.
So there you go, folks. Get on it. Get a couple of Sandy Lender books. Send her a note. Thank her for supporting the show. And also, here we go with the fine folks at Per Bostet. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye David Blaze and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, has historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at PerBostetPublications.com at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at events such as In Conjunction in Indianapolis and Louisville's Imaginarium Convention, both in July of 2024, and Prime in Indianapolis this October. Per Bostet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Thank you to Teely Harris, Sarah Marion, and Marion Allen. What a great literary trifecta they are. So, yes, now we are going to get back to the main portion of the show. And, again, this is tonight is a theme show. We probably will be getting a call or two tonight, folks, so you can look forward to that. As far as very shortly, we should be getting a call or two from folks to contribute to this discussion. But Holly came up with the idea for the show, and I figured it's a great way to ease her back into things, talking about one of her favorite topics, one of mine, and one of Becca's, and that is compelling characters. And my God, we talk about that a lot here at the house. We talk about how frustrated we get at some of the lack of compelling characters in today's a lot of the junk that comes out in today's mainstream streaming channels and shows. And we also talk about the characters that do resonate. And so, yeah, this is a very frequent topic at the house, but tonight, yeah, we're going to get into the guts of that a little bit. And of course, all of you, all the folks in the chat room, as far as I can tell, yeah, all of you are character creators. So this is right up your alley. So be sure to comment in the chat room. I know Becca and Holly are watching the chat room because they're both in there. And I'll be, of course, here as well. But Holly, yeah, you want to get us started on tonight's chat?
Thing is, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? And that's the same with characters. What comes first, character or story? Some authors, you know, the character comes first. The character starts speaking to them. Just like Lestat spoke to Anne Rice. She said he just started talking and wouldn't shut up. And so finally she had to write stories about him because he would not shut up and just kept talking. That's where her story stemmed for Interview with the Vampires and, you know, the Vampire Chronicles, is because he wouldn't hush. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, too. I know it differs author to author. I know my children's book series, it was my character first that I thought of, and then it goes from there. I had the story in mind too, but definitely the character first, because I think it's very basic around one character to really flesh that character out, get to know that character, get to know their behavior, their emotional response to certain stimuli, to certain people, you know, their personality, their quirks. You know, you've really got to dive in and know your main character. If it's a band of characters, then you got to flesh them out. I think before you even should start writing a story, because your story is going to be based around those character arcs, those characters, you know, personality. So that's what I'd like to start on and get your thoughts. What's some of your favorite book characters that you think probably they should have fleshed out more before the book, Beck? What about Edward?
Oh, poor Edward.
Twilight.
I loved Edward, but they really didn't. There wasn't enough about him. I don't know.
No.
You talk about Edward, and it's just the vampire that sparkles. That's literally
what he's known for.
What he's known for. And there was so much to his character than just that. But Bella also, her character, nobody talks about Bella other than she was just dull and boring, and she didn't have any life to her. There could have been so much more with their characters. I love their characters because I found love with books. But a lot of people don't like their characters because they don't feel like there was enough to their story.
Well, they don't feel like they know them.
Right.
And that's the thing about fleshing out your characters. You know, you get to know them. You can't just assume that your readers are going to just know them or understand them. You have to give a backstory. Explain why your character acts this way or does this, or why do they sparkle? What was the whole thing about it? She just threw it in there, but she didn't really explain fully why they do sparkle, you know, and why, you know, Edward acts the way he does, you know.
Well, and if they just watch the movies and they don't read the story, they're not going to get even less.
Mm-hmm.
Because they left so much out of the movie. So I know a lot of people who've only watched the movies but not read the books.
They have no idea.
They're missing everything, really.
Yes.
Even the little details, they don't know any, because they didn't do any backstory.
That's true. And I think that's very important. What's your take, Zimmer?
I think there is both situations that I've encountered over my years as a writer. Some of my worlds have been birthed out of a character. In the case of my Raiden Valkyrie tales, it started with Raiden and grew from there. And of course, that's now led to other characters like Ragnar and Hanvi. So the world and a lot of the plots and things like that take shape after I had this vision of a single driving protagonist character. Then I've had other writing experiences like my Fires in Eden series and my Rising Dawn saga, where I had concepts about a really, you know, vivid concept of a story of worlds, of events, and those took on more of an ensemble cast type development, where there's not a single driving character. There's an ensemble cast of protagonists and antagonists and everything in between, and those grew more out of the vision of the setting and the events, and then all of a sudden all these characters emerged from within that. So I've actually written from both perspectives, and I'm sure, you know, there's many areas in between. As I always say, there's no one right fit for all writers on this process, but those are two very different examples of story generation and character generation that I've experienced in my own writing. And I do see what Becca is talking about. You have a definite need to bring in background and things like that. But the one thing I would caution newer writers is avoid the temptation to do info dumps, avoid the temptation to just launch into a big thing, just telling everything about their backstory. Learn ways to show it, to introduce it in the action, to bring it along, to sprinkle it in, to weave it into the story as opposed to like one massive info dump. Now, sometimes in genres like epic fantasy, you need a little bit. There's a little room to wiggle on some of the info dump stuff, just because there's so much, to these worlds and going on. So, even in Tolkien and stuff, you're going to have a little bit of info dump here and there, but not in a intrusive, just a jarring type way that puts a big break on your reading. Very carefully.
You can elaborate on in your introduction. If it's that much of a importance to the story, like with epic fantasy or whatever,
prologue
characters, you could do a prologue, an intro, and explain a little bit of that. We're starting in this land of blah blah blah, and this character did this and this, and you don't have to info dump, but just give a little, like you said, season it. Just like some salt. Just season it a little bit.
One of our writers in the chat room, Clayton, does it really well. Yeah, Clayton, I think, does it really well in his Machine Civilization series, of course, where he has worked in sentient beings that are like AI. It's hard to describe it perfectly, but they're definitely they're not human exactly, nor they're demi-human. Some are demi-human, and some are even more than that. But he has a lot of stuff going on there, and the way that he kind of brings you along and weaves in those things and sprinkles it in and brings in that some of that background is definitely a good skill he has, rather than of course the massive info dump. And just to cite one example right from our chat room, it is a fine art of how to give out that information and at what pace for your reader, and trust your reader. Trust your reader more than you think, because they will pick up on things.
But never assume that they're going to know certain big tidbits, like the whole sparkle thing or the whole, the lore behind your characters. If you're writing about supernatural characters or whatever, don't expect that they're just going to know your lore, because, you take a fresh spin on things. You're kind of got to have to explain that a little bit somewhere.
Well, there's plot holes.
It leaves a huge hole,
I hate ending a book and there's more plot holes than answers.
Yeah.
That bugs me so much about characters that I've watched.
Hugely,
and then I have more questions to do
here. Frustrating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that gets frustrating. Yeah, when I'm left with that. But Clayton says, and this is a good point he makes. He says he lets his character dialogue tell the story, not me. Yes, that is definitely a good technique through dialogue to bring in that kind of information as opposed to the author narrator, because in his case, a lot of the stuff is written third person, as opposed to not. So, you bring that stuff through in dialogue, definite good technique. He mentioned that plot holes are have you buy the next book. Yes, you do want hooks. Yeah, what Becca's talking about is when, they leave just gaping holes, unresolved things, and even at the end of a series, where there's all these loose threads and unresolved things. That nothing is more frustrating than getting to the end of a series with a lot of unresolved stuff. So, but that's not the funnest reading experience when you get to that. And, they haven't tied up all the loose ends. Holly has heard me gripe about that on a lot of things. But what's that, Beck?
For the books you read, that you feel like they were just in a rush to finish, almost like they got bored with it, at the end, I've had books like that where they just kind of, they rob the character altogether. They just rush the ending, and then you just feel like you got robbed. And a book you loved, you end up not loving because of how they just wrapped it up real quickly. I hate that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many books like that, and it's. I think this is going to be a great book. I'm going to recommend it, and then I get to the end, and I feel like the author just was in a rush to finish it, and you get no happiness with how it ended or the character, or like they didn't tie up anything.
Now, see, I think that's the danger sometimes that those who are pantsers in particular, face sometimes, because there is a little bit of a risk of being a pantser. In other words, somebody that doesn't, you know, fully outline or outline at all when they go into writing a project. And it's good to, you know, sometimes have a little bit of pantser in you when you're doing a story. Give your story room to grow. Give it room to have new ideas emerge, new characters emerge. That's why I always say I'm kind of like in the middle of the plotter pantser spectrum. But the pantser, the danger is when they can write themselves into a corner. And they won't see it coming necessarily because they haven't plotted it out at all, and they're following, you know, their intuition. But all of a sudden, they find themselves in a case where, hey, how do I end this? Or how do I get to my destination? And then I think what happens is exactly what Beck is describing, where they run into that bit of a brick wall, and then they kind of have just that quick rushing kind of solution to tie it up. And what it does is obviously leave a lot of things, loose ends and things that aren't satisfactorily concluded. I think that does happen sometimes if you don't have a vision for your destination or where you're trying to get to in a writing project. I think that is one definite danger of being a 100% pantser. But that's my personal opinion on that, and I've seen it happen with a few. But it's and some major writers that are like that. So, but yeah, we got. Let's see. It looks like we do have a guest coming in here. And it's going to be a great one because I know that she has lots of awesome characters. You've already heard her voice early in the show. And, yes, that would be the award-winning, the amazing Sandy Lender, the genre blender. Sandy, welcome.
Hey, hello there.
Hi, there you are.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Yeah, we had to make sure we got to talk with you before you get way too excited about that new Duran Duran album that's coming out in October. And, of course, you'll be too immersed in that to talk to us. So, yeah, we want to make sure we get you before then.
We've got a month before that happens. I'm counting down the days. We have exactly a month before that happens.
I knew you would be. I think of you every time I see him in the news, though. It's like an automatic, like, I bet Sandy's excited. But good to hear you.
Yeah, I'm ready.
How are things going? Hopefully better than Holly and myself.
I know. Well, I missed the show last week, so I missed the health update on Holly. I'm so sorry to hear that she's been under the weather, but good to hear that they at least got, you know, something to work for you now. That's good.
It's been something else. This book's my second round of antibiotics, but hopefully this takes care of it. It says they did an extra test, and it said the one I'm on now is supposed to kill it, so we'll see.
Good. Yeah, we got to knock that out. Well, woman,
Yeah,
you got my prayer. Yeah. We'll get that thing knocked out.
It's been awesome.
We're all working to... Get 100% here. It's definitely been quite the adventure, but we did.
We're set here.
Yeah.
She's been having to hold down the fort for me.
The house is still standing.
Yeah. But,
everybody's alive. But, the house is standing. But Holly's starting to scream a little bit more.
I am.
So she's getting better.
Yep.
Yeah, the corgi, that's what they said. They said we missed Mammy, but we didn't miss that yelling.
Yeah.
Oh, for Pete's sake. All right.
Yeah, when Holly starts getting louder, then you know she's getting better. It's a good sign. I told Beck, it makes me actually happy to hear her start to get her old yelling self again.
It's so quiet. It's eerie almost. Our house is never quiet with all of us in it.
Not when I'm up running.
When you can hear a pin drop, you know that's a problem in this house.
Mm. Man.
So if you were writing Holly as a character and you're wanting to reflect that she's getting better, you don't have to say it in the prose. You can just have Holly's dialogue start getting louder and more intense and more aggressive, and the reader will immediately know that Holly's feeling mm-hmm. better. So there's a little writing lesson there.
Mm-hmm.
He says,
when her voice carries into more rooms, and there you go. Mm-hmm. The reader knows she's getting better. She's feeling better.
Yep. Yep. If we were to turn Holly into a literary character, yeah, that's exactly what would
Stephen
happen.
King
but,
King.
Oh, yeah,
I got the book, by the way, on my nightstand. Stephen bought it for me. The new
Holly. I was
going to
ask,
book,
have you gotten through the book yet? Have you gotten to read it?
No, because, let me tell you, I got sick. I'm trying to finish mm-hmm. the doggone Songbirds and Snakes, mm-hmm. you know, the fourth Hunger Games book, before it
right.
comes out in theaters. I'm over halfway through it, but that's where it stopped because I didn't even feel like reading last week. And so here we are.
Yeah, she's really
trying to get
sick.
And I'm going to read Holly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to read Holly. So, yes, it will happen. Don't worry, Sandy. But, but yeah, we were talking about. But we bring it back to the topic here, though. You are, of course, amazing at writing really engaging, compelling characters. Of course, the Choices trilogy, which you've got out front and center right now, is driven by core characters and such. So where do you fall on some of the things we've been discussing so far?
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you. And when you all were talking just a minute ago, I was listening to that, and what you just kept saying, things that resonated so well with me. And Stephen, I think something you said reminded me of like a Brandon Sanderson course, you know, where he speaks about, not doing, those info dumps, but giving people those spatterings of information about the characters. We've got to give the background of the characters. You've got to know all that information about your character. You've got to know them. I think Holly and Becca both said that. You've got to know those characters. You've got to know them inside and out. You've got to know them you've got to know them like they're a person in your life, right?
That's
Amanda Charisse, my Charisse.
Yeah.
I've known her since I saw her. She appeared to me when I was in school, all right, way back when I was in, I think I was in ninth grade. Okay, I think I was a freshman when I first saw her. She appeared to me when I was supposed to be paying attention in chemistry class, but I was daydreaming. I wasn't paying attention to the teacher because I was bored, and I saw Charisse. I saw her, and she was this beautiful woman, and I was like, wow. What's going on here? And I saw her. I saw the gem on her cheek. I saw her long hair. And I was like, well, who is this that I'm seeing? Who am I? Who is this character? Who is this chick? And why is she crying? Why is she so sad when she's so beautiful? And I wanted to know her story. I wanted to tell it. I have known her since then. I mean, most of my life, right? You've got to know your character inside and out. You've got to live with that person and know them. But you're not going to info dump that to your reader because your reader is going to get bored with it. Your reader's not going to sit there and read page after page after page of, like, every thought that your character's having. But like Stephen said, you're going to sprinkle that in for your character. And that's what Brandon Sanderson teaches when he talks about that iceberg concept, right? You know everything about your character. You know the whole iceberg, but you're just showing your reader that little bit of the iceberg that's above the surface. All that other stuff that's below the surface, you know it, you've got to know it. But you're only giving the reader that little bit above the surface because that's all the reader needs to know. But because you know it, you can transmit that to your reader. You're feeding that to the reader somehow, subconsciously. Your reader is getting it as they're reading the story. As your character is saying some little bit of dialogue, your reader is understanding it. As your character is making some offhand comment or reacting to something in the background, your reader is understanding and feeling what that character is feeling, getting that flavor. They're tapping into your character as your character is going through their arc, going through their day-to-day stuff, and your reader is falling in love with that character through the book, through the novel, throughout the narrative. I mean, they're getting into that character throughout, and that's how you're sprinkling it in. I mean, that's mm-hmm. you're above the surface. You're with that little piece of the iceberg, but because you know everything about the character, you can just kind of sprinkle it in, feed it in. And that's how you do it.
Yeah. And like, well,
according to
like,
Sandy, that's how you do it.
Yeah, according to Sandy. But also, yeah. you're right with like Clay. Clay in the chat room was also talking about, you know, you have to know that character, but he does a lot of it with dialogue. You can also mm-hmm. sprinkle it in using dialogue, mm-hmm. you know, as you go along. Say, oh, yeah, well, I did this because, you know, the past, and 2 years ago, I experienced this beast or this monster, and I had to kill him using this, you know, Oracle card or, you know, just something. You know what I'm saying? You could sprinkle it in even using dialogue, which is a good idea. You know, you don't mm-hmm. just have to, you know, info dump. You sprinkle it. Yeah, it's like
exactly.
Jesus says, like, you know, you sprinkle it in. So, yeah.
Yep.
You don't have to do a whole big storyline,
nope.
you know, an info mm-hmm. dump. No, sprinkle mm-hmm. it in, but explain why the vampires sparkle, why, you know, garlic doesn't affect them, or why, you know, different things mm-hmm. about the lore of your character. If you're doing a werewolf, maybe your werewolf isn't affected by silver. Why? Why aren't they? Well, they can talk mm-hmm. about that in dialogue to another being. Or another person, a love interest or whatever, they can talk about it with them. And then that lets the reader know without you info dumping it nonchalantly, lets them know, you know, and mm-hmm. don't assume your readers are so blindly, you know, not intelligent that they're not going to pick up on that. You know, I mean, obviously if they're, you know, any intelligence at all in their reading, they're going to pick up on that, you know, if you make it
right.
point blank in the dialogue. So, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, give the reader some credit where credit is due, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and there are certain parts of, I mean, there are certain parts of the lore, you know, in like a vampire story. There are certain bits and pieces that readers in our society just know, you know, it's so ingrained. I mean, like the idea of a vampire
right.
having to be invited into your home, that is just,
right.
I mean, it's just so ingrained in our society now. It's like, if you're reading a vampire novel, you probably know that. I mean, you know, oh my gosh, the name of the movie just went out of my head, but you know, the movie that came out earlier in the year, with Nicolas Cage.
Renfield.
There you go, Renfield. There you go. But in that movie, they had the doormat that said "Welcome." Remember that doormat was right there. Okay, so when the fella came home and he saw that, you know, Dracula was in his house, and he's like, you know, you're in my house. Well, he looked down at the doormat. That's why Dracula was in his house, because of the doormat. He looked down, he saw the welcome mat. So
welcome.
Everyone at the theater was like, boom, we understand. And that was the joke.
Right.
But everybody got it, because everybody knows the reason vampires can get in your house is because you have to welcome them in. There's the welcome mat. We all got the joke.
That sort of thing. We all got it because, yeah, I mean, seriously, mm-hmm. are you going to go see that movie if you hate vampires? No, obviously,
no.
If you've done any
right.
research. So, you know, everybody that was in there mm-hmm. likes vampire lore to some extent, and they know the old lore. They know about
mm-hmm.
the mirrors. They know about inviting them in your home. They know about
exactly.
garlic. They, if you're going to change that stuff around, you have to put it in dialogue or whatever. Why your particular character is not affected or whatever. But yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what I said. You assume the reader, so reading a vampire driven story, that they know some basic lore, you know, like
right.
you're saying, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funny
right.
joke. But people that don't understand vampires, you know, like my mother, she wouldn't have got it. She wouldn't have got it at all. And there's people like that, but
yeah.
You got to, you
yeah,
know,
then,
know what Steven says, read the room, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then if you want to break those rules, I mean, I ran into that because I have a race of beings, or ancient race of beings called the Shireer Mord, and they're in Raiden's world, and Raiden runs up against them, and they're a major antagonist, but they are a vampiric type of race and have some qualities like vampires, but I never call them vampires. and I never use any of some of the conventional things that are usual to vampires with them. I mean, they have a different back history. They have a different things that affect them and what they're about and what they're doing. And they aren't human in any way, and they don't like turn other humans into a vampiric creature. But but by doing that, by calling them the Sharir Mord, by having them, you know, with a different lineage and backstory and things like that, that's how I shift away from people expecting garlic or expecting silver or expecting the welcoming into the you know, whatever a house or dwelling that there is. It breaks that expectation. That's the other side of the coin. You know, when you are wanting to play with some of the conventions of a creature that is similar, you have to do some things to shift it away from people identifying it as quote unquote a vampire. And you have to make it something of your own so they don't expect those things. And that's a bit of a challenge, too. But you have to be conscious a lot.
Like,
but Holly's read a couple. She's edited some, so she knows that I was able to do this correctly. But it is something that you have to be very focused about, expect certain things of you as well. But,
okay. So now you edited one of my vampire satire novels for me, and I have that.
Yes.
I play with and I joke around with that vampire concept of being able to, you know, go into the rooms, because my vampire, he owns a bed and breakfast. So that hotel, the chateau, you know, it's his. He owns it. He can go into any room he wants to.
Yeah.
So I needed, you know, his love interest to, you know, own the room that she's in so that he can't go into it. So I had to make her own that room. So she had to make it her home away from home so that he could not go into it. And it had to become a joke in the book, because it's satire and it's fun. It's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
So I had to make it her home away from home. Yeah. So we had to kind of flop that around. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And there's room to play with these things and like you said, you know, like using that in a fun satire way. And I love the term vampire satire. I mean, that just rolls off the tongue so beautifully.
That's where, you know, you start playing with those characters. I mean, that to create that character and make him not be a scary vampire. You know, I had to create a vampire because he doesn't sparkle. He's not a sparkly, you know, Edward vampire, but he can't be a terrible monster either. He had to be somewhere in between. So I had to create a character that you could root for, but he also has to be a vampire. I mean, he is a predator. So yeah, you had to create something that walks that fine line. Yep.
That's an interesting thing, because when you're working with a character like that, you can have the same conventions, the rules, as it were, with vampires, but you can have vastly different representations of them, like the Nosferatu-style monstrous-type vampire or the good-looking Dracula type of, like, Bram Stoker's novel. And it's really, really interesting to kind of see how people could take, you know, the same rules, but then have characters that just have two just completely different almost representations, the way they are perceived and feel.
Right.
And it's, you know, one's being more visceral, one being more charming, you know, like Holly's Lestat over here. And then on the other side, you have something like you see, what is that Dracula Untold? The way that one is, the one that's in the cave, Holly, the master vampire, who's an absolute monster. And it's just so interesting to see the way that they take the similar conventions that represent something completely different output. And that's a lot of fun to play
fun.
With as a writer. Yes.
It's so fun to play around with that. But like I said, you know, Vince, you're going to have to explain why, if you change something like that, why does your particular, you know, and you can explain it in dialogue or whatever, but Yeah, just explain it. And you have to know those characters. Like Sandy, yours come to you very young in life, and, you know them. Like Clay was commenting that, you know, his wife's like, well, you know your characters more than your extended family. Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a relationship with them over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Stephen and he's Raiden, you know. He's got a relationship with Raiden, and that's very close and bonded, and they always will be, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. You get close with these characters. They're a part of you. They're an extension of your subconscious and your chi. So you are close.
Well, Holly,
you are close to your characters.
You're exactly right. I mean, they're in your subconscious. I have dreams with these characters. I have dreams where these characters interact with, you know, people. Real life people in my dreams. I don't want to sound crazy and say they're real to me, but they are real to me.
Some
of these characters are real to me. And, you know, yes, they do. I can have conversations with these characters any time of the day that I need to. I can be, doing the dishes and one of these characters will say, I would like to have a line that goes, blah, 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 and I will need to dry my hands and write that down so I don't forget it. You know, it's that kind of relationship with these characters. You know, Cassandra Morgan, who she's given a workshop at Imaginarium on, developing characters, and she had, a printout, for, basically constructing characters, and it was very odd to me, but it was a very good exercise for me for developing like secondary or tertiary characters, those extra characters in the background. And it was interesting because it was, how to, design characters and how to come up with, extra traits for them and their motivations. And it was a very good exercise. And I looked at that like, wow, do other authors have to do that? Because the characters that I work with, the characters who come to me and talk to me and work out their stories with me, I know them. We chat with each other and we sit down and we go through the stories together and we write the stories together. These characters and I know each other. I don't need to sit down and ask them, what's your motivation? We know it. We write it together. I know their motivation, and we do the story together. But for like a tertiary character or someone, off in the distance, it was a very interesting exercise to go through that worksheet that Cassandra has developed and, put that together for some of these extras, I guess you would call them, like the extras in the movie. That was an interesting exercise, and it just kind of caught me by surprise that, there are probably authors out there who need to sit down and do that for characters. Like Stephen was saying earlier, there are other ways to write books where you're writing the story and you need the character to plug in. Like if you've got the story that you want to tell, the narrative that you want to tell, and now you need to put characters into it. Well, you need to design some characters, right? That workshop that Cassandra gives would be excellent for that, for building the characters to put in.
Right.
I just don't write that way. And so it was interesting. It's very intriguing. So if anyone needs to come to Imaginarium and take that course with Cassandra, it's available. It was a very good worksheet. I mean, the presentation she had, the worksheets, going through that. And, Barbara Evers, she also had that workshop at Imaginarium for that Myers-Briggs test where you could, put together, you can give a personality test to your characters. Yeah,
so I thought that was fascinating, and I didn't get to attend it. Did you attend it?
I didn't get to. I had so many other things I was doing that I didn't get to. Yeah, but I think that would be fun to do.
I'm gonna have to get her to that again.
Yeah, I would love to give the Myers-Briggs test to Charisse and to Nigel and Henry Bakerson. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know? I made a Funko Pop of Henry Bakerson from the Choices series.
Nice.
Really?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a Funko Pop.
Oh, my God, you have to send us an image.
I did, it's on my YouTube channel. If you go to my YouTube channel, I did an unboxing of the Funko Pop of Henry Bakerson. He's so cute.
Oh, my God.
That is awesome.
It's adorable. Yeah. Yeah. But I would love to do, I need to sit down with Barbara and see if she would do the Myers-Briggs test with me on like Charisse and Nigel. I would love to do that. It would just be so fun. Yeah, authors should do that with all their characters. It's just fun.
I agree. Well, at this juncture, I want to bring in another voice and to the conversation, and wanted to give you a chance to say hi to somebody you know, Sandy. But we have an amazing author also that is on standby here, Rose Marie Machario, and she is calling in now to add a few thoughts. And your mic is live, Rose, and welcome. You guys came in just in time to say hi to Sandy too.
Hello, Sandy. Hello, Holly.
Hey, buddy.
Hello,
bro.
Surprise, surprise.
Hey. Oh, my God. It's good to hear your voice. Hello.
How are you doing?
I am doing great. And it is so good to hear. It's wonderful to be connected with you on Twitter. I know we're supposed to be talking about characters, but it's so good to be connected with you on Twitter and to get to see your those positive, uplifting posts from you every morning. That is so good and uplifting. It is wonderful.
I try to
hold out Twitter and I hold out Facebook doing my positive posts. Although I missed a week, and I know people probably thought, oh, God, Holly is 6 feet under and we didn't get Cinder Flop because I haven't been posted every day. If I die, send me black roses. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Well, Sandy, Rose is about to hit the road because she's actually doing a signing in Central Kentucky. Picked, of course, the unfortunate time when Holly's been incredibly sick, but Rose is coming up to do a signing.
That's really good. Congratulations on getting the signing, and I hope it goes really well. That's good.
Thank you. I'm excited. I haven't been able to be there since 2019, was it, guys? The extra this particular one.
Oh, my God.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been about that long.
Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. It's been that long since I've been to the Half Price Books at Sir Barton Way in Lexington.
Yep. The Half Price Books right out there, Sir Barton Way. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's awesome. You'll be representing Fate of the Realms, and you certainly have some great protagonist characters and ensemble characters as well. And yeah, did you get a chance to hear much of what Sandy was speaking about or some of the stuff we were talking about earlier?
About like the different characters and character development and just like them talking to you and, you know, getting to know who you are. I think it's, you know, very important to have that with characters because, you know, when you have certain characters that, you know, talk to you, yes, definitely. There's been a lot of times where mine will talk to me and start writing their own story by just conversing in my brain. And I completely enjoy that. It's a wonderful feeling and absolutely love it.
Your main characters converse in my brain sometimes. I'm speaking as Rosa's editor here, but yeah, she's got some awesome characters, and I love their story arcs and everything. And yeah, sometimes, you know, they're conversing. I think about them, and because I just adore them. I love the characters, and I love the stories. And yeah, but did that come first, or did the story idea come first, Rose?
The story idea pretty much came first. but then I dreamt the characters. I dreamt about, like, this whole scenario with the first book. And it just kind of grew from there, but I would keep dreaming about them and keep dreaming up new characters. And it wouldn't matter where I was, you know, going for a walk, in the shower, and the shower hits me a lot. But, you know, in my sleep, whenever I'm just not even thinking of it, I might be listening to music, and then something will inspire me to create a character just based on the feeling of the music. You know, I mean, a lot of Wednesday 13 went in Raw and his attitude and just, like, you know, raise your fingers in the air, you know, kind of attitude. And then there were certain things that inspired my characters via, you know, pets that I've had, pets that other family members have. Lord Braum was actually a dog.
A dog?
A dog, yes. So my dog Isis, who of course was Princess Illyria's familiar, her sire was named Lord Braum. Well, that name just stuck with me, and I wasn't really expecting Lord Braum to stay and become a main character at all. He was more like someone that I was going to get the readers to fall in love with, and I was going to kill him off, but I fell in love with him just as much as Princess Illyria did, so I had to keep him alive.
Oh, yeah. That's happened to me. I've had those characters emerge that I didn't have any, didn't see them coming when I started the story, and then they kind of, their roots go in, they start growing, and next thing you know, it's a main character for the series. So I know how that goes,
yeah.
Rose.
And they have personality, and they have, like, just all kinds of just new things and new ideas and new feelings themselves to the entire storyline, you know. So I think that characters are so important, and to become, you know, sometimes I will talk about my characters so much that someone comes in on a conversation, they think I'm talking about real people. They really do. I've had that happen. They think it's a real people I'm talking about. And they're, I'm like, oh, no, that's not, that character's my book.
But they're real people to you. That's, you know, that's what Sandy was saying. You know, they do, they get in your head. They're in your head, literally. They're in your head, you know.
Yeah, they speak to you. It's like Clayton was talking about. Like Clayton says, that, you know, he tell him the story. And in his, you know, in his mind when he writes, and that's very, you know, in a way that's similar to kind of what happens to me. It's a very cinematic kind of thing. I see it play out as I write it. But I think you need to have that sense of believing that they're real, because, you know, otherwise, you know, you're not going to be able to get the reader to suspend their disbelief if you yourself can't suspend your disbelief. So, I mean, to you, I mean, they should feel real. They should be organic. They should have that sense of reality, because how else are you going to sell that or convey that to a reader for the way that they're gonna believe and connect with? You need that.
Exactly.
I think it's absolute necessary. Sandy, you think so as well?
Definitely. I wanted to remember the names of the characters in Rose's book, so I was reading through the description of the Amulet of Elements on the website, so I wasn't paying very close attention. I apologize.
It's okay.
Yeah, but yes, yeah, you want to. These characters are real to us, so yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very real.
Sometimes, though, I'm going to throw a wild card in here for both Sandy and Rose and Holly and Becca to address here. Sometimes, though, there are characters that really resonate with readers and later viewers and movie versions, who don't necessarily have a big arc, who are more archetype characters. And I'll give you three examples just to illustrate what I'm talking about. But think about the Ian Fleming novels with James Bout, Jack Reacher with Lee Child. Think about Conan the Barbarian with Robert E. Howard. If you think about those characters and stories, there's not really any kind of real significant character arc. It's almost like they're like an archetype character that fill a certain role in each of those stories, and they get great plot twists and plots and whatnot, but the characters themselves don't necessarily have like some big arc. And a big arc is commonly what drives a lot of the most engaging characters, but yet you also have this batch of characters over here that don't necessarily even have much, if at all, of an arc, but yet they connect with readers, like James Bond, like Jack Reacher, like Conan. You read these, all their stories, and they are the same in every story. You don't see a big change in between the various stories and those characters at all, not within the stories, not between the stories. They are who they are. I mean, they're very, just kind of iconic or archetypes, or, I'm trying to find the perfect word there, but there is room for characters that are of a little bit of a different nature. And I don't know how you all feel about that, but I'd love to hear your comments. And if you have any characters that you've either written or read that are like that you enjoy, in the way that I've enjoyed Conan, that's a character I love, with Robert E. Howard. But are there characters that you all have connected with that are not necessarily have a big arc or big backstory.
Mm-hmm. Did his arc happen though when he was a child? I mean, didn't Conan?
You could argue
his arc just happen early, and then he became the warrior?
Right. But in all the stories though, he's there. I mean, in every Conan
story, powerful.
But he's who he is, and there's change in him.
Yeah.
From the point that he's in those stories as an adult, to the next story, not really, and you don't even have a sense necessarily of where some of those stories fall in his timeline, like his personal timeline. They could be anywhere. And it's interesting to kind of think, to step back and think about that. I have many times. I've stepped back and thought, oh, well, how would I assemble the Conan stories in like a linear timeline? It's going to be hard to do. It's really almost impossible, but it's a, But I think that some of the characters like Jack Reacher and James Bond kind of work a little bit like that too, but they're characters that captivate people. They are, but you're right, Conan had they did bring out some of the backstory of him as a youth, but once he gets to be his adult self, it's what he is. He's just a very primal force.
I do find those
characters interesting.
I'm going to forget his first name, but the Secret Service agent Bannon in the Olympus Has Fallen and Angel Has Fallen, those movies. Pardon?
Yeah.
Those were good movies.
Those are really good movies. That character, he's just an archetype character. He doesn't have an arc. He's just this driven, get the job done, protect the president, protect the vice president, protect the president, protect the nation. He's that Secret Service agent dude, right? And he's just
Mike Banning.
Get the job done. Mike Banning. That guy. Yeah. That archetype character. I liked that character. I'm a huge Ian Fleming fan, a huge, original James Bond fan.
Mm-hmm.
I read all the Ian Fleming books. I'm a huge fan of that character. So the Mike Banning character also resonates with me. So Stephen, I'm a fan of that archetype character right there. Definitely.
Yeah, I think they tend to fit better in things like thrillers or a heroic character. That's what Conan is.
Yeah.
And then thrillers, they are
hero.
Heroic characters. So it's more of a hero type archetype. But they do fit. Yeah, you encounter them more often in these type of stories. But they are who they are.
Yeah.
They have this pretty much the similar thing in every single story they appear in. And that particular one, one of my favorite actors portrayed Mike Banning. It was Gerard Butler. You know, I just think it's awesome. So. But good stuff. I mean, good stuff. Yeah, and that's why I was so irritated when they were rewriting all rewriting a lot of the Ian Fleming stuff. But it's because it's just these are good characters and really compelling. But Holly, do you have any that are like that, Holly? The ones that don't change much but yet are awesome.
What'd you ask, Emma?
Oh, I just said, are there some that you like? Because I know you have so many different shows and books you read, but are there any that you would cite that are kind of like that type of character? The one that doesn't have like a huge arc, but they just kind of fit a role or a heroic role in stories but they don't have a big arc.
They don't have a huge arc? Well, I'm going to tell you, there's this couple, Umbrella Academy.
Oh.
Umbrella Academy's great.
Great.
But not all of them. What's the one guy that has the big muscles? The big.
Oh, I love him. What is his name?
I can't think of his name offhand, but he really don't have a character arc. I mean, he plays a less smart person that's just headstrong, bull strong, and body, strong. But, I mean, he really doesn't have much of a character arc. It's the same way. I know I go back to Anne Rice a lot, but she's who I know the best besides Zimmer and Rose and, a few others that I actually edit. But it's Louis. Louis doesn't have a huge character arc because Louis is always upset because he still has a human side, and he feels guilty for doing everything he does. He's always going to feel guilty about killing people. He's never going to, just ease into it. It's been hundreds of years. He's been a vampire forever, and he still is not used to it. He never will be. He will always have the human element and human emotions. So he really does not. I mean, he's an important character. Because Lestat loves him so, and I mean, they made him a really big character in Interview with the Vampire, and he goes through all of the Vampire Chronicles. He's sprinkled in here and there, but he really don't have an arc. It isn't like he ever comes into his own or does anything different. He stays about the same throughout the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
That's
still interesting.
He's
still in,
B characters, but he's a main character. I mean, he's a big character, but he really doesn't have an arc. I don't think Edward really has either.
I'm curious. Beck, do you think the Hagrid character falls in that category in the Harry Potter books? Like, he is who he is. Or do you think he has...
But he really didn't have an arc. He didn't have an arc at all. You didn't see him a lot. But if he went in the movies, I would feel like Harry Potter would be Harry Potter. He tugs at your heart all the time.
Well, in the books, I think he played an important role. But he never really had an arc. I mean, there was no change. No, like, he met somebody, got married, coming to fatherhood. There was never none of that.
And, of course, if you don't read the books and you just watch the movies, you don't actually know why he...
Mm-mm.
Is the way he is, why he doesn't get to do magic, why he, has been...
Because it's not explained.
...punished, so to say. Mm-hmm. But he does a very small moment where we think he's going to find true love in that other giant. The other tall lady in the fifth one, Goblet of Fire, when all
fire.
The schools come. And you kind of think...
They might get a love interest or something.
They might get a love interest. He might finally have a story.
Some kind of arc.
And it doesn't happen.
Right.
But I don't care. I love Hagrid.
Right. But they don't have an arc.
Right.
And they could still be a very important part of the story, but they really don't have an arc. And that goes back to your secondary characters.
That's kind of like the Hunger Games. You know, we only see some of those kids from the district
True.
For a split minute, but it's just enough that you
yep.
fall in love with them.
Divergent series
right.
the same
mm-hmm.
way. You have Tretch, who was the main character, but then the rest of them are kind of just, you know, sprinkled in.
But you love them, even in those brief moments.
Right. And they're endearing,
right.
and they don't have to go into a backstory, and they don't have to have a character arc because they're not pertinent to the plot. They're not going to create holes by not giving them an arc. You know what I mean? They're not a main part of the story plot and the whole,
mm-hmm.
you know, end game.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
You know, they're sprinkled in for like
right.
Fluff. It's fluff.
But just enough to tug
right.
at your heart when you're
mm-hmm.
upset when something happens
mm-hmm.
to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what Ben is saying there is really is quite what Beth just said there is quite deep. I mean, like what she was saying about Hadrid, the character can be extremely compelling, and you can love that
yeah.
character, and that character can be, I mean, like we can create a compelling character that does not go through some kind of arc. The character doesn't
right.
have to go through mm-hmm. a huge change to still
right.
tug at your heartstrings and still be one of your favorites.
Right.
There was a lot of characters
exactly.
in Harry Potter.
Oh, my God, Dobby?
Right.
Dobby? Oh, God, I love Dobby. I've got a little Dobby Lego on my desk.
Even,
I mean,
like, just the teachers, not like Snape or any of them, but, like, just the brief teachers we
mm-hmm,
saw,
mm-hmm.
it still broke my heart when they passed away, when they died. It was like, I only
Right, you got attached
easily.
To them. She was able, J.K. was able to get you attached to them, but yet didn't have to give them a real big character arc because they wasn't a part of the whole
right.
story, you know? They wasn't a main component. You didn't need an arc.
Right.
But the story wouldn't have been the story without them also.
Right. That's where you get into the secondary characters that me and Steve talk mm-hmm. about that are so important. You got to have them. And sometimes,
mm-hmm.
guys, they do get a character arc in the next books or a novella or a spinoff. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they get their own book.
Do you remember the book that was written after Twilight? What was the girl who got, she got
Bree.
Changed?
Bree Tanner.
Yes. We loved her so much,
yes.
she ended up making a whole little short story about her.
Because fans,
yeah. mm-hmm.
because fans ask for a story, a backstory, something into Bree. Where does Bree come from? Who the hell was she? You know, you know, wanted to know more about her. And that happens, too, as a writer. You know, you'll have these secondary characters, and all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, well, I could do this. And, yeah, let's give them this arc. Let's do a novella,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you can just go wild with that, too. It depends on if they come forth and talk to you.
Right.
Like Sandy says, you know, they do. They come forth and take a life of their own.
I've got one for you.
Okay.
Inanimate objects that are unsung characters.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots.
That immediately makes me think, which
the
you're
one
gonna
ring.
Laugh, is
the one ring is Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, right there.
Yes, yes. Miss Potts.
Yes.
I don't know why, but that's
mm-hmm.
what bounced in my head. I mean, how endearing, honestly, in the Disney Beauty and the Beast is, you know, Chip and Miss Potts.
Oh.
I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. It's the dog that is the stool.
Yes, they don't need a story arc. They don't need none of that. They're just enduring
no.
characters.
But think
oh.
about the One Ring in Lord of the Rings. The One Ring is a kind of character that's present
oh, yeah.
Throughout that story. It's a ring.
Yeah.
It's the
yeah. One Ring.
Well,
just think about the Amulet of Element.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Exactly.
Out there.
Yes,
absolutely.
Right there. The amulet itself. I mean, hey,
yep.
that's
mm-hmm.
the whole point of the story. It takes a life of its own. That's true. It can
mm-hmm.
be an inanimate object. That's great.
Yep.
Swords. Excalibur.
Excalibur
mm-hmm. is a character of its own. There's been movies,
takes
plenty of books,
yeah.
plenty of novellas written about Excalibur. And they
exactly.
don't even mention Arthur much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like
yep. that. That's part exactly. of... Yeah, it's part
mm-hmm.
of why they named you know the weapons.
Now they're giving
yeah, they
me
took
ideas.
On a
now
kind
I'm
of character.
About...
Yeah, I think
uh-huh.
Stephen King had a car.
Yep.
Chris Stephen King had a... Yeah, that car was... It was quite the evil one.
Yeah.
That was a good book.
Oh, James. On Adam's Family. The hand, you know, he's a Bethlehem character. He's very important, and they even added him to the show Wednesday on Netflix, you know, which was phenomenal. I'm like, yay, Sing's back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He talks, but he still is my favorite.
An enduring character. So, yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can even do that without even dialogue. It's clever.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that.
And readers find them enduring, and they love them, and they're going to keep coming back for more.
Yep.
So, yeah, so depending on how you're using a character in a story, they could have a big arc. They may have little to no arc, or they may even be something like Rose was saying, an inanimate object or something necessarily sentient in the way we think about it, but they do fill a character role. Yeah, I think Excalibur is a good example too.
And the ring and
mm-hmm.
The car, you know, the ones that don't talk, you know,
right.
that aren't brought to life, because the ones that are brought to life then that talk and, you know, show emotion and things of that nature and empathy and, you know, they're a whole nother different type of character, technically.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Sorry.
Yeah. And
somebody cut out there.
I think it's a great idea. I'm getting ideas now about writing about an inanimate object. And yeah, you could actually write a whole series. I mean, that's actually a good.
Well, what's that show that we like?
Which one?
The Lock, which is The Lock.
Lock and Key.
Lock and Key. That was a whole series about inanimate, literally.
On Netflix. Yeah, that's true too.
They literally just needed that key.
The key.
And
mm-hmm.
it would make inanimate objects alive.
Right.
Part of that episode.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, guys.
Yeah.
I never thought about inanimate objects like that. But, yeah, become crucial, too, and take on an arc of their own.
Mm-hmm. A character role.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Do you have any of those to cite, Sandy? Objects
well,
that
in the
become
choice,
like characters?
Yeah. In the Choices series, Amanda's, her sword, Lyric, has its own power. And then
See?
That chalice, the chalice that she finds in the Freyja Mountains, it's got its own power as well. And there's more to that chalice than meets the eye. And I can't give away too much about it because,
mm-hmm.
you know,
spoiler.
It's the climax of the series.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sitting back there thinking of you, Sandy. I was like, yeah, you know a thing or two about objects that have roles.
Yeah,
that are like
I can't give away too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I didn't blurt it out, but I figured out, yeah, I'll throw this at Sandy. Because, yeah, she knows a thing or two about that.
Yeah.
But,
well, and, you know, that Funko Pop that I mentioned of Henry Bakerson, he's holding the chalice. I was able to get a little chalice for him to hold. So the Funko Pop of Henry is holding a chalice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
That was fun.
That is so cool. I don't know how I missed that one, because I catch a lot of your YouTubes, and I don't know how I missed that one. But, yeah, I'm going to have to chase that one down for sure. But all right, Holly, so where do we want to go next on our character discussion? We got about 10 minutes left, I think.
Guys,
well,
I want to ask Rose a question. May I
okay,
ask Rose a question? I want to ask her a question about Illyria Rose, the princess.
Okay.
I I mean, we've got this princess who, you know, she was doing the things that I guess she was supposed to do. Like she had to do needlepoint and her lessons on becoming a lady until, you know, she was 16. So tell me what changed for her. What happened when she was 16? What happened so that she got to get away from the boring stuff? Tell me what happened.
Oh, she met Lord Brougham at the ball.
Oh my God, I love it.
Fell head over heels sitting with him. And he kind of sweet-talked her into going on a little adventure and then betrayed her and led her straight to this old crone, and I'll just call her that.
Oh no. Okay. I'm intrigued
so,
now. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, so he betrayed her, and so she ended up literally kidnapped by this crone who drugs her and throws her in this magic crystal cage, and she doesn't understand why. I mean, she was told that, you know, once she turned 16, she would start developing her gift of premonition. Well, this old crone, who, of course, at this point, we don't really know who she is, and she's just all about, you know, Princess Illyria giving her her gift, you know, her visions and such, and showing, you know, just what she has to offer her, because she's thinking that, you know, she's going to just have all this extra everything. You know, she's going to show her, like, you know, what she's destined for and if she's going to get this, that, and the other. And so she's just really trying to get Princess Illyria to have these visions that she's not had yet. Like, she just turned 16, literally.
Right.
And so, you know, Lord Brougham, you know, he feels horrible that he did this to her. But at the same time, you know, he really can't complain at this point. What's done is done. But once she figures out a little bit more of what is going on, and he kind of gives her a brief explanation of why he did it, then she kind of gets tricky and decides that she's going to play the old crone's game, and she gets away. Lord Brougham helps her, and they take off. And then finally, you know, they get to where they feel like they're far enough away, and she knocks the crap out of them.
Excellent.
Like,
excellent.
Hey. So then, you know, whammo, she has her first premonition, and then they go on this epic adventure to find Lord Brougham's father, because he's literally the reason why he kidnapped the princess to begin with, because the crone kidnapped his father and blackmailed him into helping. So they go on this quest to go find him. And so she, like, one thing keeps leading to another and another. And she finally kind of just starts coming into her own and figuring out a lot of things.
Right.
And as the more the story goes, you know, she grows. Just in confidence, and but also finds out a lot more about herself that she didn't know, and that her, you know, she feels like her parents should have been, you know, the ones to tell her.
Yeah.
So
I love that her first premonition comes after she knocks the crap out of Lord Brougham, the guy who, you know, betrayed her.
Yeah.
I love that.
Laughs the crap out of him. So,
yeah. Well, and you said earlier that Lord Brougham, like, didn't you base him, like, on your pet dog? Is that what you said earlier?
It was, like, Princess Illyria has a familiar name, Isis, which was named after my dog, Isis.
Sire
was on her, you know, she was a German Shepherd. So her sire was this, you know, very highly pedigreed dog, you know, named Lord Brougham. And aww. I wasn't expecting to keep Lord Brom. And, you know, Princess Valeria fell in love with him. So, aww. Hey.
I like that.
Had to keep him around. So there's a lot of family dynamics, too. I mean, there's a lot of characters. Like, they're her parents. And then there's four mm-hmm. other brothers. Each one of those brothers have a familiar. And each one of these familiars are, like, you know, third characters, probably, I guess they would be, because they are still a big part of the story and what happened.
Right.
And they help create arcs or lead arcs or, you know, help, you know, mm-hmm. each individual character do what they kind of need to do. They're like, there's a support system. So if anybody
that.
Had a best friend, it's their familiars, and they're
right,
oversized
yeah, okay.
and exaggerated.
I like that. I like where those
awesome.
Character things come from. I like that.
And they're all named after dogs or cats.
Oh. I like it. Wonderful.
All right. Well, let's make sure we give a little time, because we have had two great call-ins tonight from Rosemarie Machario and Sandy Linder.
Yeah.
So I want to give – okay, Rose, you can go first and then Sandy. But each of you, I'd love to give you a chance to talk about anything you'd like and give your links for people to connect with you. So go, Rose. You go first.
All right. Well, if you put a .com after my name, Rosemarie Machario, you can find my website. I am all over Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or X. What is X? And
yep.
I am now on TikTok. So I'm finally
mm-hmm.
on TikTok.
Nice.
Yes, you can find me all there.
All right. And your signing is at Sir Barton Way, location of Half Price Books in Lexington, Kentucky. Saturday.
Yes, Saturday.
What are the hours again?
I think 1 until they kick me out.
So 1 through the afternoon. Yes. All right.
Yes, all day.
Go see her. So if you're around Central Kentucky, go see Rose.
Rose, I will
yeah,
try my best to get if I'm still not shaky, and I will try my best.
If you're near I-75. The Sir Barton Way Road, the road that this Half Price Books is off, is right off the I-75 exit at that location. Definitely an easy place to find if you GPS it off I-75. So, yeah, definitely come in if you're from anywhere around Central Kentucky. Because Rose is awesome, and it'll be a great visit. You'll have a lot of fun with her. But thanks for calling,
thanks.
Rose. I appreciate it.
Thank
you're the best. And over to you, Sandy. Now we'll give you the platform.
Okay. Well, folks can find me, I guess, on my website is probably the easiest way. That way they can connect to me from there, and that is authorsandylender.com. I also got the domain for sandylender.com because I'm paranoid. But I just wrapped up another online book tour for the Choices Trilogy. So all three books from the Choices Trilogy are out and about in the world, and they're from Seventh Star Press. So people can find me on Amazon, on Seventh Star Press, or on sandylender.com.
Yes, and her YouTube channel. Follow it. She's got great content on there, always putting out videos. I mean, she has a lot of content that has been going up there. I highly recommend you subscribing to Sandy's YouTube channel. Sandy
yeah.
says
although
read.
I like to, yeah,
that's right.
I like to promote other, I mean, there's so many good independent authors out there that not a lot of people know about yet. So I like to read other people's books and talk about them on my YouTube channel. So I do that as much as I can.
And you do yeah. it well. But all right,
thank
Holly,
you
made it to the end of the show. Good job, because I know you weren't feeling great. But go ahead, and we'll give you the honor of wrapping it up here and close it out.
All right. Well, thank you to our call-ins and all of our listeners out there. It's been an informative show, and I hope you learned a little. I hope you've entertained a little. Join us next week as we bring you a guest and a great topic. And it will be 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be a little creative for the rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend. Until next Wednesday, good night.